Okay, we're being recorded now. That's the most important thing.
We're on.
Nobody knows if there's any meaning. The only fact is that we're being recorded. And now we can claim that we've had this class.
Actually, this is playback, so don't anybody hit the pause button.
Right. No, the music is not on. Anyway, good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, it's 7 o'clock, and this is Life in the Labyrinth. We're working our way through the book Life in the Labyrinth by E.J. Gold, and we are on Chapter 11. And this is the second part of the study of Chapter 11. If you'd like to see some of the comments that have occurred or listened to the program for the first half of the chapter, you can go to wingsofchaos.com. And you'll see the chapters under Life in the Labyrinth. I'm thinking about adding another element to the website, actually. Right now we have the introduction, we have HBM, all the chapters there. We have Life in the Labyrinth, we have Joy of Sacrifice. I'm thinking of putting a section just on essays that I'm planning on writing. And that's I'm just saying that.
Okay.
You know, I'm just saying.
Well, we look forward to seeing those.
Okay, maybe it'll just be miscellaneous topics.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Well, it's your site.
That's right. So let's get started. Last week, does anybody remember where we stopped? First of all, does anybody remember the name of the chapter we're on?
I thought we were on 11. Are we on 11?
Shape-shifting up the totem.
That's it. And where we ended was in the new book, it's page 124. And the paragraph starts with, actually I'm going to back up to something we actually did cover a little bit at the end, to the paragraph that begins, totemism is founded on the basic understanding, okay, 110 in the old book. So we're going to start there and launch off. There's a lot of material to cover this evening. Actually, I forgot. There's something that was posted on Facebook, but I'm going to go ahead and read it. I think the reason the term shamanism is hard to define is because its very purpose is to consciously step out of habits of definition. It's a different ball game to what your chemistry teacher was talking about. The fact that it doesn't appear to stand up to any kind of criteria is irrelevant. By the above definition, most great scientists were being shamanic when they made discoveries now considered mainstream orthodoxy. Geroid Walsh wrote that. So what's he saying there? Just let's get ourselves back into where we were. It's important. We should be able to get into the space that we need to get into to study this material relatively quickly now. It requires effort of attention and presence on your part, on all of our part, to get there. And then we can understand we're not in the normal world here. We're actually talking about being in a different dimensional work, okay? It's important to know where you are. That's part of the big issue in this particular chapter. During the course of this, not sure if I brought it or not, we're going to be talking about ways to identify where you are. And there's some surprising methods of how to do that. We're going to bring some things together from different studies that we've all done and match it to this. So let's begin with that paragraph. It's a good paragraph to start with, so we ended with that last time. And it is, totemism is founded on the basic understanding that all identities, both manifest and unmanifest, can be understood as totemic forms. isolated and distinct morphological configurations which are, through expansion, transcendable, existing simultaneously and corresponding in many different dimensions at once. Okay, so what we're talking about there is that we we have to get out of the concept of thinking, gosh, how can I get my body exactly the way it is now, and all my habits, and all my emotions, and most importantly, my ego, into these higher dimensions? Because I want to be in the higher dimensions, but I want to be exactly like I am now. Is it possible to do that? In the end, the fundamental answer is no, it isn't. The fundamental answer is we must become something different. And in order to become different, we have to think in a different category. That doesn't mean think better in the categories that we are thinking in. Okay? That's, oh, if I had just thought about it like that, then I'd have it. No, the answer is becoming different means we can't begin to perceive differently. And we're talking about working with and standing in a macro-dimensional space. At our level, we're talking about the very beginnings of this. That doesn't negate our abilities to do some work in these areas. This is an important point. And Ivan, I think you and I've talked about this, and I know MA and I have, is this whole idea that because it's so bloody strange, you know, the concepts that Castaneda wrote about with Don Juan, oh, I could never be that kind of a shape, and he's a crow, and this one's a coyote, and this one's a this. That's not what we're talking about. We can take the beginnings of our own shamanic form. There are individuals that I know right here in this room, that when they are in that shamanic, in the macro dimensions, they are a different form. They look exactly the same. The body thing is the same. But they literally become a different thing. That's when we were talking about invocation previously. Okay, so jumping ahead a couple of paragraphs. Being traditionally human, we find ourselves irritatingly familiar with a definite set of morphological configurations, a self-imaged view of our own apparently permanent and unchangeable identity, which determines what is our lifetime niche somewhere in the totem. Basically, in other words, we just stick to what we are. That's what we are. We're going to stick to what we are, right? Doesn't it seem axiomatic that in order to see and be different, that we have to be different? We have to be different. So what does that mean? What it means is that we understand the idea of waking up. And right now, each of you that is at work in this chamber that we're constructing, because we're constructing a chamber right now, as we construct that chamber, each of you is finding moments and positions where you can begin to construct who you are in that chamber. You are becoming different than you were 30 minutes ago, a few hours ago. You're becoming something different right now because you're willing to do that. We talked about intention. Okay. So the next paragraph is very important. When we occupy a chamber and are at home in it, we need not remain for long before we make a place for ourselves there forever. What does that mean? First of all, let's just parse it a little bit. When we occupy a chamber and we are at home in it. Anybody? What does it mean, and we are at home in it? So we're starting on the basis, we're going into a different set of fundamental, we are being different. So we're in some position of the macro-dimensional space, and then it says, and we are at home in it. What an unusual phrase.
When we are present in it.
So Susan says when we are present in it.
Maybe it's a habit of visiting it.
But it's habit so comfortable. Being yourself.
Go with that, Susan.
Yeah, it's being yourself.
In a certain way, I don't know if Silverdale's here, but he's often talked about when we get into the essential self part, we're actually starting to become ourself. We're beginning to sense the infinite. So we're becoming ourselves. Now, each chamber has a different signature. So part of it is that we'll find different chambers that we become more active in. We need not remain there long before we make a place of ourselves there forever. So there's the general concept of it, is that when we're in traveling in that manner, we feel, oh, this is my home. This is my higher home, and I'm coming to that. This is where I can stretch my wings. Another sense of it to consider is that there are certain chambers where certain people begin to shine. That's like their signature. Others are there with attention and presence, but it may not be theirs as such. So, Susan, when we get into these places where we feel a sense of comfort in that higher form, not the machine form, what does that mean for you? Somebody that posed that question to me said that they feel, well, they feel more like a dancer. Or some people may feel they speak in those chambers. They are a voice.
For me, it's more about feeling and like vision, seeing things just more crisply.
More what?
More crisp.
More crisp.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now Jim H. is saying if you're slow, then you'll fall asleep.
Who?
Jim H.
Okay.
He's saying that on the log?
Yeah.
She's
reading the log again.
It strikes me, another possibility is that for me, to feel present or invoke presence or be at home in that chamber, I may need to conform. I may need to invoke or take up an identity configuration within that chamber. That's natural or archetypal to that chamber. It's like if I feel at home in.
Blank chamber.
Yeah, in a blank chamber. Well, I'm thinking on the deck of a boat. You know, I better be able to handle the bow line and the yard arm and so on, and be able to sail a bit.
At this point, when we get into those chambers, we're just at this level. We're just exercising. Can I hang out there? Okay. Can I hang out in these chambers? Can I hang out and be, in a sense, respectful of it? But what do I feel about myself? What do I notice when I'm there? Is this chamber more aligned with me than another one, for instance? Compare and contrast. So we're beginning to form a different type of discernment. This is a discernment on a whole other level. This is way a different level here. The art of evaluating our position. Think about that. Go ahead.
There's a couple comments.
Okay.
The Hawk Lady is saying that it is no longer strange.
Yes.
And then Aura is saying that you are at home there. You can hang out there. Being in that chamber is easy, it is easy to be your true essential self. Coming home to me means finding myself the real being beyond ego.
So part of it, and I'm going to say this every time, it's practice again. The Hawk Lady is telling us that suddenly there's a less fear. There's, I'm not afraid anymore. I'm able to hang out. I'm able to be penetrated by that radiation in that chamber. So listen to this phrase, the art of evaluating our position, discovering exactly which level of totem we happen to be sitting at a moment. This is a very advanced work at that level, to know that clearly. We're beginning to know what it feels like to be in a space, to know what it feels like. Some people have had the opportunity to identify that thing called which level of the totem we happen to be sitting in at the moment. I have seen it demonstrated and have noticed it objectively observed, and the feedback was there too. So it can be done. There are specifics. But right now we're just learning how to be there. I noticed that certain people wind up becoming, like they become healers, or other people wind up becoming guides for others. They lead groups together. Those are examples of positions on a totem. That's what those people find in those chambers for them to do. Let's go on a little bit here. If we are to work at different dimensional levels, then we must have a formal presence in more than one domain and have the psychological tolerance and control over the concentrated diffusion of our attention. We must understand what that means by now, right? This is not beginner work. This is intermediate work. Mm-hmm. So, what is, you know, we have this psychological tolerance. We're becoming something different than the human ego that began this. And we are allowing that, and we're having the courage and the determination to have, we have the tolerance to be in these higher forms of a little bit more radiation. Our expanded morphological identities as voyagers, we will have far more than just the one, but this expanded identity provides us with a natural connection to macrodimensional bodies. I don't want to get too mysterious here, but it is pointing a way for us. We do have macrodimensional bodies. I've worked with a number of individuals over the years, and there's some people I trust in certain spaces. Okay? That's a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
I trust this person in this space in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people I don't trust in those spaces. And then it doesn't demean anything from them, just that they're not facile yet in those spaces. That's okay. But it's a truth.
Mm-hmm.
If we had the vision to share in the macrodimensional life, then we would see and comprehend from within the trans-dimensional characteristics of the essential self, the voyager. Let's expand on that, Ivan. Go ahead and I'll give you a hint, okay? My present sense of self, the voyager, is in reality the void itself, having no qualities or characters. Okay, so expand that, and you can see that we begin to see that we do have, we've discovered that we are the voyager. Not a pleasant discovery, by the way. At some point, you get the feeling, you understand that the voyager has no home the Voyager really has no place to rest their head. The Voyager is a Voyager.
Yeah, on the other hand, the Voyager gets to assume these shapes or identities, and one of the characteristics of, let's say, working in a chamber is feeling at home, evidently. So, so it may be a localized
at any given moment. Yeah.
In that, well, it seems to me that the we're talking about the Voyager, which has no qualities or characteristics. Multitasking. This Voyager has no qualities or characteristics, but in a certain chamber, it's going to be a large, aggressive individual of some kind. In another chamber, it's going to be an observer.
That's right.
Minuscule in the corner or something. There could be different ways to be in different dimensional chambers. Different archetypes to a chamber or something.
Silverdale used to talk about this tipping point where we are in the historical personality. Most of the time, that's where most of our energy goes. But gradually, we begin to practice this thing called awakening the machine until we find ourselves, we tip into, that's where I live more. I live there more. And as you begin to practice that, and that becomes more and more and more your home, you begin to realize and discover you are a Voyager. That, in a sense, that is who you are. You're not Joe or Janice or Sam or Rachel. You're a Voyager. And the Voyager stands ready to serve. The Voyager stands ready. If, so then you begin to see that we are the Voyager. Until we are able to achieve this vision, a large part of our own essential nature eludes us. A large part of our essential nature. So at the same time that EJ is giving us clues as to how to voyage, he's also telling us this is a moment of self-discovery. This is who you are. Any group of people, you'll notice, that is working in this manner. Each has different characteristics. Very different. That's a good thing, by the way. Now, the Papyrus of Ani depicts the labyrinth as a series of chambers, each intrinsically containing exact instructions for vertical and lateral movement. Okay, now, this is an important point because it's a series of chambers. It depicts a series of chambers, all right? Now, there is no Egyptian Book of the Dead. The Papyrus of Ani is considered the Egyptian Book of the Dead. There, in fact, is no single Egyptian Book of the Dead. In the pantheon of the great Egyptian voyagers, there were a number of books of the dead that were present. And we see that because in many of the tombs, they're depicted there. They're depicted on the walls, the various, we'd call them texts. And they were very different, but they've been studied diligently. But I'm going to give you a couple of the instructions that are indicated in the Egyptian Book of the Dead to help us understand what is meant by depicts a chamber in the labyrinth. Mm-hmm. All right? And I have a number of examples.
Okay.
So this is literally from, this is the Wallace Budge offering, okay? Mm-hmm. Chapters 1 through 16. The deceased enters the tomb, descends to the underworld, and the body regains its power of movement and speech. So here, the Egyptians are describing, here's what's going to happen to you in these chapters 17 to 63. It's the explanation of the mythic origin of gods and places. The deceased are made to live again so they may arise reborn with the morning sun. That's just an exact description, oh, this is what's happening now. The deceased travels across the sky in the sun arc as one of the blessed dead. Having been vindicated, the deceased assumes power in the universe as one of the gods. So this is a particular type of voyager.
Mm-hmm.
My mouth, another one, my mouth has been given to me that I might speak with it in the presence of the great God. So here they're talking about a different type of speaking. And guarding against the theft or corruption of the deceased heart by a group of gods called those who steal hearts. Okay? And then some of you may have read or worked a little bit with the American Book of the Dead, also by E.J. Gold. And I'm just going to read one chamber of the 49 chambers. let's see. I think I wanted to do the 20th chamber. So here is a description and a depiction of a chamber in the labyrinth. I'm bringing together now the instructions in life in the labyrinth and directing them to us exactly in American Book of the Dead. My present form exists without limitation. So this is an instruction you're giving to the voyager in the death cycle. My present form exists without limitation. I find that I can move easily through all areas of the reality spectrum, viewing all aspects and details of all six lower dimensions as I wish. My movement seems to be directed by the power of my attention and places me in that locality of the space-time discontinuum. So, and it goes on. I'm just saying that. So now we have a series of books that are directly talking about moving in the labyrinth chamber. So as shapeshifters, if we can decline to be so much in the human realm, so much in the ego, we have a chance to be a voyager for a little while. When that chance occurs, grasp it. Go with it. Work with it.
And there's a couple comments.
Go ahead, please, Susan.
Hawk Lady said the art of knowing what to be in what chamber to get what we need to get. And Pianjo is saying locational discernment indeed.
Yeah.
Some I cannot speak in, others I want to sing.
There you go. So there's an example. I'll come back to the Hawk Lady comment, which I'd like you to reread in a moment, please. But Pianjo is telling us there's two different chambers that he went into. One, he's in reverence and silence. And another one, he is the singer. So those are two different signatures in the chamber. All right?
Mm-hmm.
He responds differently. He is a different voyager. He's the same voyager, but he has different signatures, different jobs, in a sense, in each one. Can you reread the Hawk Lady's comment, please?
Okay. The art of knowing what to be in what chamber to get what we need to get.
Okay, so let's work on that. It's an important comment that Hawk Lady is making to us here. But it's not something I learn in the human world and take into the labyrinthine world. Right?
Right.
You have to be as a child. Mm-hmm. Some of you may have read the Bible. And it has a comment about being as a child, right? Entering into the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it means. This is practical. You walk in there with the tradition, the trait called I don't know. But in surrender, you come in there and let yourself discover who you are in that chamber. That's the flip, right?
I don't think it's a decision that you make. I think it's something that comes to you in that chamber.
Absolutely.
The chamber tells you how to. Do you think has a? It actually tells you how to behave in that chamber.
You will. It's not that it tells you how to behave. You discover it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact that several of the individuals on tonight have discovered different signatures in different chambers. So we're still in this level of gathering data. We're gathering data that we take forward here, okay? Okay, one more quick. This is the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It's actually not the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It's actually The Great Liberation by Hearing. And it was actually wound up being translated under the guidance of the Dalai Lama by this fellow here, Gurme Dorje, and Graham Coleman, and Tupten Jinpa were the great forces behind getting this done. Started in the 80s. Took like 15 years. So all the material surrounding it actually became workable. And it's the same thing that we've learned in working with the American Book of the Dead. The Lama literally sits down with the chambers in the liberation of the Great Liberation by Hearing and reads them to the deceased, or begins reading before the deceased has passed. Think about that. Why would they do it before the deceased has passed? What's going on there?
Starting to give instructions.
Paying it forward. Yeah.
It's orientation, it seems to me.
Yeah.
It's beginning to help orient the voyager. If the guy is just a guy or a lady lying there, just a piece of meat, nothing. But the Lama is saying, you are a voyager. You're not just a body, you're a voyager. Remember that. Knock, knock. And reminds us of the higher chamber that we go into.
Yeah, and there's this incredible, I think it's a Canadian filmmaker, made several hours of documentary about this. It's about to do the reading.
You're invoking then the humanness, and the Lama is saying, no, silence.
It needs to be quieted.
Because we're in the realm of the machine anymore, we're in the realm of the essential self, is what he's saying. I'm just going to read a very brief, this is directly from The Great Liberation by Hearing. O child of Buddha nature, listen without distraction. Isn't that nice? O child of Buddha nature, listen without distraction. On the seventh day, a five-faceted, multicolored light, which is indicative of the purity of your habitual tendencies in the expanse of reality, will arise before you. Simultaneously, the divine assembly of awareness holders, arising from the pure realm of skyfarers, will come forward to escort you. So that's an exact description of that chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lama is talking to the Voyager and saying, oh, it's the fifth day now. Here's what's going to happen. Because the Voyager just, whatever. Okay, so I just wanted to give those examples of like something called depicting the labyrinth as a series of chambers. Okay? And then we see the Bardic song, I have been a drop in the air, I have been a shining star, I have been a word in a book, I have been a book in the first place, I have been a light and a lamp, a year and a day. Moving into a chamber, we borrow a morphological identity, and according to this idea, we can only go where we already exist. And I think, is Silverdale on, by the way? Yeah. He just got on? Okay. Okay. He'll tell us that this would be exact, clear understanding for what he's been teaching us over the last couple of years. We can only go where we already exist. Do you want to expand on that a little bit, anybody?
Another formulation is wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah, okay. Sure. And
I think there's a very strong element of that fluidity and flexibility in this. It's just Voyager. It's just like tension and presence of the essential self. You need also to be, and I'm not sure if it's, it's developing labyrinth skills to be able to morph into various identities, shapes. In other words, the essential self is without quality, without characteristic. But to do this consciously, to do this labyrinth work that EJ is talking about, there's a need to merge, actually, to surrender. You use the word surrender quite a bit.
Yeah.
To surrender to the characteristics of that identity, of what's in that chamber, because that's the only way you're going to enter a series of chambers with a series of different vocal inhabitants. You know, you have to be somebody that's in that chamber to dwell, to feel at home again with these vampires in that chamber.
Yeah.
So this is like, you know, it's just like some of the skills of an actor, a professional actor.
But also this idea, if we are an infinite presence, if we are an infinite presence, in a sense, we discover ourselves when we get there. We discover that is who we are and who we can be. I am that. I am that, and I am now in this chamber. Oh yeah, I know that. Because the infinity of what we actually are is, it is not limited. We're limited. And as we begin to get out of the way, we begin to expand into this wonderful thing. Of course, the ego comes along, wants to capture it and say, me. Unbelievable.
And Dion Joke has a comment.
Okay.
We can only go where we already exist means perhaps that there is no alien territory, no stranger in a strange land. It is all our own projection.
Right, there's no place. That's the potential of the essential self. There's no place. There is no chamber that I haven't inhabited.
Correct.
And this is in the form, in this Bardic piece up here, it says, there is nothing which I have not been. So this is like saying, you know, there may be a chamber, like I suggest here, there may be a chamber where the manner in which you are eternally in that chamber is as a table or a chair.
It is true.
Why not? A vase of flowers.
I have noticed the feeling of being a vessel, literally, a bowl. So there's no question about that. We can spin off into sarcasm about that, but the point is that there's a truth to that.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of sarcasm, but you know what strikes me is that there's a practice, an element of warm-up or practice for this in, for example, lucid dreaming. I'm not very good. I haven't had much experience in that area, but I have had, I know from a few experiences, lucid dreaming that it's an area where you can definitely assume different shapes. You can feel your awareness can inhabit a different shape. A different,
yes.
You know, when it's in a chamber as a dreamer, you can be aware of it. If you can have that, what do you call it, awakening. I mean, you can sense yourself as bodiless, as not having an ordinary body.
I wanted to read the on the new one, it's the top of page 127, the paragraph, for example.
There are a couple more comments if you'd like.
Yeah, please, I would like.
Okay, so Mark Roach is saying, reminds me of what EJ had said of when passing through the chambers in the macro dimensions, must dance the way they are dancing there, as long as we are there, so as not to be attuned to and not discordant with that chamber. That was my paraphrasing.
But we will discover that if as we become better labyrinth voyagers, we understand we aren't imposing our stuff on the chamber. We enter the chamber and we acquiesce to it.
And if there's one of those very intense radiations, if we recoil or resist that, we're going to be ejected from that.
You'll simply be rejected.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the art of psychological tolerance is part of this work that we're trying to do now. Was there another example or comment,
yes.
Susan? Or?
Yeah, there is. Aura is saying, going where we are, we stop ourselves by thinking we can't, or don't know, or are not, but we always are, nothing and everything. So when we realize that we are and always have been there, we can really go there, surrender to it.
Yeah, and so that's part of back to what Hawk Lady was saying, is that if we continue to practice this, we'll lose some of the fear we have, and we'll surprise ourselves. Oh, I can go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because we have these veils of failure that we just love to carry around like those giant burdens. And, I can't. Okay. And then you can. Okay. But you have to discover that, and it does take effort. It's not like, in a certain way, it can be like the blink of an eye, a snap. Yes, there. That's true. And like somebody I talked to, one teacher I talked to, he says he was enlightened to a certain level, no question about it. And he says, the students ask him, well, were you destined to be that? Were you already predetermined that you were going to be enlightened? He goes, yeah. But I was also predetermined to work my ass off for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This doesn't just happen, but it is available.
Well, and Mark Roach said that that's probably why we hang around with all teacher types.
Well, Mark, with all teacher types is what you're saying. And Mark, the point I'm trying to make here is sometimes people don't have that available. What then do you do? What do you do? How do you construct that chamber for yourself? What are the elements you can begin bringing in? And can you attract like-minded voyagers near you to work with you as well as you are able? That is one way to do it, though, is what Mark is saying. And for example, in the human dimension, we might begin as four human primates sitting around a table having dinner. Then, suddenly, as we enter into the next higher dimension, we might come to realize that morphologically speaking, we are now four large, overly communicative cockroaches sitting around a large, late,
Dictoire
lump of charcoal, and so on and so forth. That part, so be it. I mean, the point is that you may have what's called an invocational dinner. And it may start out in a certain way, and we've done this a number of times, you know, you start out, it's just a dinner. But as you go forth, you realize this is something else. We have come to a different moment.
If it could go on in that sentence, because this is actually what may occur to us.
Although our expansion into the macro-dimensional forms is eminently visible from the outside vantage point, we could have easily missed the change, because the momentum of our habitual subjective view confines us. Even when we're beginning these ideas of this voyaging, we begin to go there, we just miss it. We miss it, but we miss it because of that. It's
momentary lack of attention.
it's a huge lack of attention. And we want to describe the change, the macro-dimensional change, like Kafka or Rilke might in some of their works. That's what they were getting at when they were talking about this. But it's more subtle than that. It's so subtle that you might not notice it, which means that a development of our attention is so critical to it. And all I'm saying here, all we've been saying in the last few weeks here is, let's actually pay attention to this now. Okay? In the primate state, the reverberations of which tend to carry over into higher dimensions in spite of all precautions. This we understand. We get into those spaces and the person can't stop their human biological machine from manifesting. It's infuriating, but nevertheless, it occurs. We lack the equipment to detect the subtle morphological change unless we also happen to notice a radical macrodimensional change. So a lot of these changes occur very subtly. They're very subtle. And if you're paying attention to it, you'll notice the change come about. You'll notice a change come about. Go with that change. We want to be hit on the head with a hammer. Says, oh, yeah, we all changed into frogs, and then we were singing frogs, and then the frogs turned into star beams, and the star beams became a constellation, and we were all one. Okay, that's great. And
sounds good.
How about hanging out as voyagers in this space with attention and presence? That's magic to me. Quite frankly.
If you get one of those transitions without blacking out, you'd be doing pretty well.
we lack the attention to the equipment to detect the subtle morphological change unless we also happen to notice radical change. So that's rare, as he goes on to say. Now, the next several paragraphs are about the mathematics of music and all of this. And I'm not up in that enough, Ivan, to walk us through. Should we? I was going to skip that unless you wanted to dive deep into it.
Well,
I don't think so. Let me just make a comment. Only so far as to say that I understand that DJ has touched on this or a related subject recently in some of those drumming classes.
Yeah.
That he's talked about the musical notation basis of these. I've heard him say more than once that sound vibration is what constitutes, you know, the illusion. Allegedly, always.
Yeah.
Sound vibration. So anyway,
that's
very all in all.
Yeah. It's a huge area of study, music and how it interfaces with this. A huge area. Oz, on his blog, and I don't know what it is, has posted some really nice writings on concept. You might go there.
Yeah,
that would help you a great deal. So I'm going to jump ahead, though, a few paragraphs, a couple of pages. And I'm actually on the wind him up on the bottom of page 129 on the new edition. The paragraph is, the totem, an instructional device for professional shapeshifters. Do you see that?
Yeah, that's kind of three quarters of the way down on 115 in the old edition.
Okay, so the totem, an instructional device for professional shapeshifters, initiates who must now know thousands of difficult morphologies. So this is what Harry was saying, Pianjo and others were saying, that you wind up being a table or a chair. You don't know what you're going to wind up, but you have to practice, and professional shapeshifters don't bring their stuff to it. But they know that they must initiate thousands of different morphologies. What is the proper morphology for the place where we are at any given moment? That's a point of self-observation. Practicing the totem, we upscale on our own initiation, pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, get a leg up without a groom to hold the ladder. The key to macro-dimensional movement, we may never know where we are going, nor the deeper meaning of what we are doing, but we always can know where we are. We're not at a point where we can understand purpose, the broader purpose, or what we're supposed to do, but we can know where we are. So what can you do, rather than cataloging everything you can't do? Extending our morphological identity into greater and more complex topological domains, we must solve the riddle of the present chamber, allowing us an easy penetration into deeper domains. Right? Make sense? With our chosen totem, we practice ascension and descent up and down Jacob's ladder, from the assumption of the empty throne, the highest form in which we become the ultimate absence into the depths of the mineral world. And Jacob's ladder, of course, is the ascension and descent of the heavenly angelic body, showing, in a sense, the path to the heavenly empty throne. We discipline ourselves to the task, to voluntary slavery. This is a different thing than voluntary slavery. And I think that, I really think that Spinoza puts it in a wonderful way, and he talks about being spiritual automatons.
Wow.
Okay? He uses the term spiritual automatons. This is this literature, all this crisscrosses. But for us, it's brand new. So how can we become voluntary slavery? Voluntary because although we can let the cup pass from our hands at any moment, we choose to drink from the cup of life, letting the peace of death pass us by. So we choose that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We take on that burden.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of something, Ivan?
It reminds me of what you were talking about before about voyaging endlessly.
Because we take on the burden of becoming the voyager.
Mm-hmm.
Once you take that on, there may be tasks that you can do and work with. Don't know yet. But at least you're in the game.
Mm-hmm. Also, for some reason, there's an African proverb that goes something like, if the hunter becomes a better and better shot, becomes more and more decisive in the target, and the bird has to, instead of landing on branches, the bird has to keep flying and flying and flying and flying without landing.
Wow.
The only way to escape that hunter.
Yeah.
Or,
wow.
Yeah.
We love life. We do not reject it with occlusion. This is the secret of our extreme presence. We accept our place in the world and seek no refuge in sleep. An enormous mansion, many chambers, we see before us, six doors. Choosing one, we pass through into the next chamber, within which we see another 10 doors. And again, we must choose a portal to continue our penetration. We must have courage to assume the expanded morphological forms necessary for macrodimensional movement and the non-artificial, which is to automatically imply non-human intelligence to follow with exactitude the path suggested by intuitional labyrinthine clues. Part of the difficulty is accepting the burden of a higher responsibility. It's like all these higher beings, I think, are sitting there hoping somebody is going to take it. It's not like that the secret is so vast and all this. They're just hoping anybody is willing to take this burden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a willingness. And a lot of the people that wind up as those leaders say that was the question asked of them, and they were able, compelled to answer yes. I'm not there. I mean, we're not there. We're beginners at this point. It is for our intuition that we need our Ariadne, the female spirit of the labyrinth. We will find her within us as we realize our feminine nature and learn that we can trust her implicitly to provide us with beneficent but not always clear guidance. In this sense, clarity depends entirely on our willingness to focus the attention and to keep it from being swept downstream in the bubbling, rushing rapids, the mind. Do you recall, Ivan, or anybody, the beginning of the last portion of the Divine Comedy? What happens to Dante? I've brought it up before.
Well, I know that you're maybe talking about the point where the pagan died, you know,
Virgil.
Virgil is no longer acceptable. He can't go across a certain threshold. So now Beatrice, who's the lesser, basically, the divine feminine, is now becoming the god.
And Beatrice carries him then into Paradisia. Beatrice is there because when Dante was a very, very young man, he had pure love for her. Pure love for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she died. And she actually upbraids him for actually getting married again, but nevertheless, she was the form of pure love, and she grasps his hands and says, "Now I will take you."
Mm.
Into the world called paradise, Paradiso, and he learns about that. So we're given a lot here. this is a great deal. I mean,
In fact, I just want, it's funny, David, I don't know if this ever struck me before, but I just wanted to comment that this last few paragraphs that we just read, that E.J. goes from this, you know, reference to the Old Testament reference to Jacob's ladder and the angels going up and down, and he touches on, I'm sure when he says an enormous mansion with many chambers, it's a
New Testament
reference of my father's, there are many rooms in my father's mansion,
mm-hmm.
I think that one of the parables of Jesus, and then he comes to Theseus and the Minotaur.
Theseus and
Ariadne provides the thread, the technology, a ball of yarn to get Theseus out of the labyrinth where he's supposed to get eaten by the Minotaur. So this is like, I think what it suggests is that this is a really very mysterious, like not mysterious, but you know, it's a very difficult to convey margin that E.J. is talking about here, this issue of the transition, you know, going over from the primate or from the machine into this much more expanded ability of the essential self. Anyway, he's really piling on the associations in this passage here.
The references?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for both the men and the women to understand what is meant by the feminine. It doesn't have a lot to do with your personal ego, I guarantee you.
No, but it does. In our, what would you call it, in our discussion, in our study circle here, it certainly harks back to the bringing the woman to life chapter.
And we can remember that, too. So this is voyaging in this realm has an important feminine signature to it. And that's something we will remember, we do remember as we go forward. So that pretty much brings us to the end of chapter 11.
You have one more comment.
Please. Yeah, we're ready for it.
And this is from Pionjo. What about the admonition to be as little children? Could this be a good mindset with which to travel?
It is a good mindset. And part of the way I take that, and, you know, I wouldn't mind talking to, having talked to Jesus about it, but he doesn't seem to be around. But I think what he meant by that is that we have to get into the innocence of the essential self, drop the burden of the machine and come into the innocence as a child is. And we know this, but can you get into the place called wonder? Because if you're truly into the place called wonder, guess what? You're not in your mechanical mind, right? Oh, I know that. Oh, I know that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I know that.
But also it doesn't say the passage you're talking about, it doesn't say that a child can enter into the kingdom. It says that you have to become as a child.
It says
so
become.
So that's the work part comes in. It's the regained innocence. It's an innocence that you relearn or you...
You have to pay the price.
Find out how to do this.
You have to pay the price, and we are getting to that place of paying the price. Yes, Susan?
And he goes on to see everything as new, to keep our primate momentum at a minimum.
Yeah.
See everything as new to keep our primate at a minimum.
So, once again, it's the learning how to walk through the world, in a sense, in wonder. Walk through it in wonder rather than be collapsed into the mechanicality of the human biological machine.
Several times tonight you've mentioned the word practice.
Yes.
And I sort of thought, well, I wonder what is the good practice, but I think we've just found two things.
Good.
That is the practice, to become as a little child. We can practice that now. We don't.
Yes. Well put.
We're in a chamber where we can do that.
Yeah.
And also being in wonder, maintaining that state of wonder.
Let me parse that a little bit. On the
okay.
one hand, we are in the chamber right now where we can do it because it is a safe chamber. It is safe to allow us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We can expand on that a lot more later,
mm-hmm.
this idea of safety and innocence.
I think that if it becomes an individual practice to start with and not a group practice,
that's
we
right.
just practice this individually this week and see how we react to being in those states.
Now, the practice of wonder, however,
mm-hmm.
is unfettered. Tomorrow, when you go to work, or you go to the shopping mall, or you go to wherever the heck you go tomorrow.
In the car.
You go to Atlantis, as Ivan apparently. And
drop into something else.
Wherever you wind up going, walk in there with wonder rather than, oh, I'm going to go pick up a couple of oranges. Da 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 da.
Then they're done that.
I already understand. What if you suddenly use the term like a diffused vision and you walk into this space and you notice people moving and walking about and you notice certain things? You will notice a world that you've never seen before.
You'll notice you upscaled.
And you will notice you upscaled. And then you're going to notice something even quite interesting. You're going to notice there's some people there that will suddenly notice you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So practice.
Very interesting practice.
very interesting practice. If you do decide to work in this manner, share it with your fellow students here. Go on wingsofchaos.com and share that under Chapter 11. This is a great concept that MA is bringing to us. So give it a shot. Let's see what happens. And we'll take it up next week. And next week, what chapter are we going to be on? Oh.
Not next week.
Not next week. Next week, we will not be here.
No.
So next week, I'm traveling, so I'm not going to be able to participate. The following week, which is the 27th, I believe, we'll take up the next chapter. And what is the next chapter, M.A.?
Chapter 12, Encounter with the...
Seamurg.
Seamurg. That's an interesting name, isn't it? A school experiment.
And then for next time, Mark was curious to hear more about trusting our feminine nature. So you wanted to go back to that.
Yeah, Mark, you've been around the game quite a bit, actually. And I think it's time for you to take a shot at posting your thoughts about that on the log, website.
Wings of Chaos.
Wingsofchaos.com. Go ahead. You have a lot to say about that. You actually do. I know, Mark. But we will, by nature, we must be discussing that as we go forward now. Beatrice has arrived. We will be discussing her as we go forward. But for the moment, since there's 2 weeks before the next class, Mark, why don't you give us a head start and see what you have to say there, okay? And Ivan is going to read the closing.
I'm going to read the capstone here. When a shaman wants to land on the sun, he's no fool. He goes at night.
My thoughts, exactly. So thank you for coming this evening. And we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks when we'll take on Chapter 12. Good night.
Night.
Good night, all.
Good night.